This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Welcome back. Chucky's coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980 here in the DMV. In Richmond, you can listen to us on 910 The Fan or 105.1 FM. We're streaming live on the Odyssey app. All across the country, you can take us on the go. Of course, you can watch us on the Monumental Sports Network, brought to you by Crop Metcalf, the official heating and cooling company of the Junkies. This is like an old school moment for us.
It's like full circle.
So about 25 years ago, David Bernad, who we called Clank David at the time, was playing college basketball at McGill, I believe it was.
Is that right?
Well, I went to go play. My voice is almost up. But I hurt my ankle freshman year.
Oh, right.
And I ended up not playing, but I think it was between my freshman and sophomore years, I worked for you guys. 25 years ago. Yeah.
So he worked with Brett.
25 years ago?
Man. He worked with Brett. CK was not an intern, but CK was like an associate producer. Now he's like the big boss. He was saying it's wild. I was like, yeah, CK runs this. Doesn't run the building, but he's...
Well, he runs a lot of the company. Up. He runs a lot of the company.
He's a big Willie. Yeah.
But hold on. Let's get David's story. So when you decided you wanted to intern at a radio station, what were you thinking? Just anything to get into the sort
of
the
entertainment? Did you listen to us at Bullis? Like, you went to Bullis.
I was obsessed with you guys. So I grew up listening to Howard Stern.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Grew up listening to you guys. I was obsessed with talk radio, sports radio.
Right.
And I really wanted to work for you guys. And so I had a connection through DeMatha, coached by Kibbs, who knew.
Oh, yeah, Hibby.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
right.
So he connected me with you guys, and thank you. And got me the job. But something I should tell CK 25 years later, I actually faked my letter from McGill to get the job. I forged it all. I had to get college credit, and they said no.
So I remember, you just said, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I remember being in my freshman dorm, and I literally had someone fake a document for me to get the job.
So. That's okay, so man. Great. It works out.
So, exactly. All right, so you came, and you're like, all right, but you were obsessed with talk radio. I get it. So was I. So were a lot of us that were here. That's probably who I felt, Ease and Drabby and CK, and a lot of us are in radio. You do the internship with us, and then do you finish school? Like, what happens?
Yeah, I had the best summer, first off, working for you guys. And I don't know if you remember, I was like your... Stuttering John, you would send me out to ask obnoxious questions of athletes, and I was fearless.
Is that the Will Clark? Do you have that?
Yeah, I mean, that's...
find the Will Clark.
I know, but I have the interaction with Brett.
Okay, I sent a text to Brett, and I said, "Yeah, I was like, you know, we're gonna have David on the show tomorrow. It's like, what do you remember about him the most?" I was like, I remember, you know, the celebrity shootout with Will Clark because he was kind of behind Brett. Brett was asking questions, and Brett said he was nervous, and then David repeated him, nervous man, nervous.
That's the line I remember from him the most, nervous man, nervous.
That's his signature line on the Junkies. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then Brett gets choked out by Will Clark because he was bitter.
Yeah.
And we would do that, but then he said another thing about David, and this is a tried and true. I told this to Brett. This is a tried and true formula that we used to goof on him for not banging enough chicks.
Oh, right. I bet he solved that problem.
No comment.
Yeah. But that was like, I was like, well, that's pretty much fill in the blank for whoever is like our young guy.
But like, how old were you at that?
That's
point?
Evergreen.
Like,
you're 20,
right?
Like,
I was 20.
Okay,
21. I mean,
right.
Yeah.
Look, when you're 20, you're still trying. Like you're trying to find your way around with women.
For people that don't know, that are just tuning in, just give David, Cakes, you could do it probably off the top of your head, just his his top resume.
Well, I mean, he's executive producer of The White Lotus.
Right.
He produced Immaculate with Sydney Sweeney. He did Jury Duty, executive producer, which we loved. I believe that was on Prime.
No, yeah. Or was it Pluto?
Freevee, Prime, whatever.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah.
Whatever they're calling themselves.
But anyway, going back to what Eric said, so how did you
get into it? And those are just some of the...
I just want for people to understand who we're talking
to. I don't remember what you were studying in college.
So I knew I wanted to be a producer. I think working for you guys was like a thrill and kind of like...
It was like a one-off.
Yeah, but like a bucket list thing for me. And then I went back to McGill, honestly, truly. And I kind of just was hustling. The next summer I went to LA. I interned for a producer at Warner Brothers. And then I eventually graduated and I really wanted to work in the mailroom. I wanted to start at the bottom. It was like this fantasy. And I think I used you guys or tried to use you guys to get connections to LA to help me get into the mailroom.
There's no way that helped, though.
It did not help. But I tried.
Right.
I tried.
There's no way.
Yeah, I tried.
It was a good theory.
We don't have a lot of clout in Hollywood. In case
we were syndicated for 3 years, so we were national for 3 years.
Those 3 years.
Yeah.
But I really did. I tried to like help you. I think you guys tried to connect me with an agent or something, and then I went out to LA and I was like, you know, thought I was gonna be, it was gonna be easy. And I remember it took me about 6 months to get my first job in the mailroom. I was just grinding and hustling.
What does that mean when they say the mailroom? Is that like working at the freaking post office? Like, what does that mean?
So back then, it was really a mailroom. So I was, you know, you'd have to wear a suit and you would literally push a mail cart and deliver mail to people. And this is when scripts were not emailed. They were printed.
Right.
And I would draw. I mean, I did, you know, crazy stuff. And I was really ambitious. So I would go into people's offices and I'd be like, whatever you need, I'm your guy.
Right.
So I was doing crazy stuff. Doesn't exist anymore.
I got abused on radio, so I can handle whatever you guys have to throw at me.
By the way, kind of. No, but yeah. And so then I literally was delivering mail, and I would deliver packages, and, you know, ex-client was drunk and left his car at this bar. You have to go pick up the thing, and, you know, this actress is afraid to drive on the highway, so can you go to her house and
you could really network this way.
Yeah, but, like, doing really weird things.
And you showed people you would do whatever it took to get your foot in the door.
Exactly.
So you had no life.
I had no life. I was working, you know, making $25,000 a year, working 80 hours a week.
But you loved it.
Loved it. I loved every second.
Did you have to do the bit where you dressed up as, like, Johnny Depp from Pirates of the Caribbean, like, outside of the Chinese theater to, like, augment your salary? Like, 24K in LA doesn't go a long way.
No, I was living with two roommates in a tiny place, you know, paying $400 a month in rent, and lived, like, eating, you know, Slurpees and hot dogs and chips at 7-Eleven and just grinding.
Sounds like my college career.
We did the show.
We had that in common. Yeah.
Sounds like the life. Yeah.
But then it's just a hustle. And then I started just producing. I would meet young filmmakers and producing short films. And Funny or Die had just started. Mm. And I was doing, I did a lot of the first Funny or Die videos.
Mm.
And then just hustling. And I eventually met Mike White, who I do, you know, White Lotus with. And
so you're always like a creative guy too, not just like a hustler. Like, you knew, and I heard you talking in the background, like, you're a big reader. Were you always that way?
I think so. I mean, the truth is, and you know, Mike Hibbs at Bullis, my basketball coach, and I flew him out for the premiere last week in
Thailand.
LA. And I flew him out. I did a Thailand premiere last week, and then I did an LA premiere. And
For
me, that was like a real, like, emotional moment, because I told him when I was in high school, I'm going to fly you out to a premiere. And he came, and it was really his English class, to be honest, that really...
He was actually a great English teacher.
Great teacher.
I had him my freshman year. Yeah, he's great.
And that's really...
So he was at DeMatha?
Yeah, and then at
Bullis?
Yeah.
Gotcha. He's been around a lot, yeah.
He really got me hooked on stories and reading and changed my life. And the truth is, like, and I told him this last week, like, nothing will ever be as tough as those Bullis basketball practices. And when I started in the mailroom, you know, you have these guys who are yelling at you and kind of grinding, but... I would be like, nothing.
You're nowhere
near as tough as Mike Hibbs. So
All right,
we're joined by David Bernad right now. He's the producer of White Lotus
season three.
The
top producer.
Episode one came out on Sunday. Mm-hmm. It was a banger.
Yep.
It was a good one.
It was very good.
Episode two on Sunday on Max. So let's be honest. We've goofed a lot about D-Train. I think we got to address it. He put us in the movie D-Train.
We didn't
really know what we were getting into. There's a twist in that movie.
Oh, there's a dark theme to that, right?
I'll tell you something funny is, first off, the movie went to Sundance, played in competition, which is the hardest section to get into, killed. Uh-huh. You made a massive mistake. We sold it to the wrong distributor. But there's a whole storyline about Banana Boat in that movie, and we had to go and get product and get them to give us their likely. So when they ask you what the movie's about, mm-hmm. we're like, okay, well, we're not going to tell them everything.
Right.
There's a big twist.
Yeah.
So we just told them, we just sent them the scenes that had Banana Boat. They were like, cool.
Okay.
Jack Black, James Marsden, sounds funny. I'll never, for the rest of my life, forget the looks on their faces at the premiere. Yeah. When they realized what they had signed up for.
Right.
Shock. Yeah. Right. Never heard from them again.
By the way, James Marsden, jury duty.
Yeah.
He's in Paradise right now, which is really good on mm-hmm. Hulu. Did that, like, is that, I've noticed this in series, like on Max or whatever. Do you have go-to actors and actresses that you put, like, that's one of your go-tos?
Yeah. So James and I became really close after after D-Train, and he's one of the funniest, mm-hmm. if not the funniest person I've ever met.
Seems like a good dude. Like,
excellent human. Yeah. And we worked together now 3 or 4. I did these, did you guys ever see 7 Days in Hell? Andy Samberg, it's a tennis mockumentary on HBO.
Okay.
And then I did one, which are really fun. And then we did one about the Tour de Pharmacy, about the Tour de France. Mm-hmm. Marsden's in that. And then when I was casting Jury Duty, I'm like, I need a famous person who's really funny, who's not going to ask me too many questions. And I think when James signed up for it, he had no idea what he was signing up for, genuinely. So he called me like the first week when we were doing rehearsals. And he's like, wait, what is this show? I was like, mm-hmm. he really had no idea. But he's amazing. So yeah, so for me, Immaculate came out of working with Sydney on season one of White Lotus. And I will say, I was in Thailand making White Lotus, and I heard the review you guys did. Someone did a great review of Immaculate, which was thrilling for me. So thank you. I still check it on you guys. I'm still, for me, when you guys something, it's the biggest compliment. Yeah.
Oh, that's so
it's
cool.
It's true.
Well,
genuine.
That's Kevin.
Thank you, Kevin.
I guess you never met Kevin McCarthy, but that's who did the
Kevin's
review.
Kevin's like one of our other stars that's blossomed from the show. David's up there. I think David might be our biggest star. I think he's surpassed Kevin. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Let's say David, Brett's killed it.
Yeah. And we're still stuck here.
We're the same losers.
Like, we're just doing this forever.
And so who was the... Did you know
Sydney Sweeney was going to blow up like she has?
Yeah. I met her in a meeting. She came in and pitched me an idea for a TV show. And I was like, oh, this woman's a star. And she was so different from her.
The jugs? How'd you know?
Aura. She probably had an aura to her.
Yeah, she had an aura. No, but I take meetings with so many people and I've met thousands. You know, you take these general meetings and she came in, she just kind of had that X factor, the eye test.
Was she a complete unknown at that point? She had done a few things.
And... She had done Euphoria, when I met with her, she was like complete. She's completely different from that character in real life. So you realize how good of an actress she is.
How talented, right.
Yeah. And so then when we were casting White Lotus, we were casting it really quickly. You know, we needed someone for that part. I maybe her agent called or casting director brought her up, and I was like, oh yeah, she'd be perfect for this part. And we kind of
I still don't understand how you make the transition from doing odds and ends. And, you know, picking up drunk actresses, and then, you know, you do some stuff for Funny or Die, which I guess is really maybe your first break, right? Yeah. But how do you discover, like, and know and other people trust that you really are a creative guy? And
It's funny. I'm like, on reflection, it's hard. I couldn't even tell myself how to do it.
Yeah.
But it was really genuinely just hustle.
Hard work.
And
who gave you your first break, though, that really crossed you over?
So Mike White. So I was Mike.
Tell me more about him.
Yeah. Mike is the greatest. Mike, you know, wrote School of Rock, wrote The Good Girls, Jennifer Aniston movie. And
so that's Jack Black, School of Rock, which again, connections. So he did that. Yeah. He does D-Train.
Exactly. And so Mike then did Nacho Libre and was in post on this movie called Year of the Dog. And I was working at UTA in the mailroom. And I was working for an agent, and I wanted to be a producer. And so Mike's assistant at the time was like, why don't you come work for Mike? Mike's starting a company, a Paramount, and you should do that. And thought about it, and of course jumped on it. It's funny, I went to go interview with him, and I was wearing my cheap suit, and I had really cheap shoes on, and Mike hated my shoes. And was like
right away,
he's like, this guy's not cool, and didn't hire me. And his assistant, who I had always been nice to and kind of paid it forward, and she forced Mike to hire me, and that was 20 years ago, and I was hustling and
grilling
grinding
his shoes. Now he's wearing white Nikes.
Right. And I was his assistant, and I was hustling and making these short films on the weekend, and I made a bunch of digital shorts. I did something with Ashton Kutcher, and I was doing these did a James Franco, Mila Kunis, Funny or Die video, and Mike gets a show picked up at HBO called Enlightened, this Laura Dern show, and I was his assistant, and he looked at me and he goes, "You should produce it. Why don't you produce this for me?" And that was it. That was the jump from, I went from assistant to producing.
How did he know you could do it?
What does producer mean? For people that don't know, I've always kind of struggled with that. Okay, director makes sense. An editor makes sense. What does a producer do?
By the way, my parents still have no idea what I do for a living. Producer is kind of like a GM, a little bit of a sports team, and really, but more so, it's like I basically fit in every, I'm like the glue guy. No matter, with the filmmaker, director, showrunner on a TV show, if they don't like, they're not strong at casting, they're not strong at development, they're not strong in the editing room, they hate dealing with the network, studio, I basically fill in. And some people need more than others. Mike White, who I do White Lotus with, is a genius. And, my job on White Lotus is different than jury duty, which was an idea that I had conceived with another producer. And we went to writers with it and then sold it. And that one requires a much more of a creative lift. And so producers, really, every project's a different kind of skill set.
Do you do funding too, or is that just another part? Like, that's the studio just takes care of that.
And that's the confusing part, is that some producers just finance.
Okay.
I go out and raise financing. Like D-Train or Immaculate was an idea that we conceived and then went out and raised financing.
So how does that work? Who do you go to?
So Immaculate, for example, that was a movie. I had Sydney Sweeney. I had a horror script. I was watching Sydney on season one of White Lotus. There was these kind of darker scenes, and I was sitting and I was looking at her on the monitor. I was like, she's brilliant, and she would be brilliant in a horror movie. And I literally went up to her between takes and said, "We should do a horror movie together." She's like, "I love horror. Let's do it." Then we spent about a year looking for the right project. And this was a script that she had read before and loved. And she's like, "If you get the rights to this, I'll do it." Mm-hmm. So then I had Sydney. I had the script. And I basically went out to, there's financiers in Hollywood, that everyone, there's like 15 great ones. So we basically sent the script around. We had 6 offers. And then we basically went with this guy, Teddy Schwarzman, his company Black Bear. And so they fully financed it, gave us $12 million. And, that's it.
I see the budget on that was $9 million, makes 35 plus. So yeah, that's got to really be considered a success.
That was a major success.
And you're making 4 extra money, right?
Yeah.
All right, we want to talk about White Lotus. Bring him back?
Yes. Yeah, oh, God. Yeah,
all right. So, David, bring you back. We'll talk about White Lotus. Over the years, we've talked about you because we saw you holding hands with Kate Hudson, or I don't know if she was holding hands.
What a life, this guy's.
But I'll tell you, people text me when they hear you guys. It's still my friend Kevin Miller, who's probably listening now. I was in Thailand, maybe drunk last week. Someone texts me, and I'm like, "How do I get in touch with these guys?" Yeah. And you guys are making fun of me, which I love.
Yeah,
I love
great.
It.
Yeah, yeah. So, right, our pal, Plank David, David Bernad, host of, producer of White Lotus, will join us for more next.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We told you we're going to give away these Harlem Globetrotter tickets. Caller 10, 800-636-1067. We'll give you the tickets to go see the Globetrotter Saturday, March 8th at Capital One Arena. Tickets on sale now. For tickets and more event info, visit thefandc.com/events. So David Bernad is joining us in the studio. Who's David Bernad? Mm-hmm. On the show, basically 25 years ago, he was known as Clank David. I told this recently when we said you were coming on the show. The reason is he had this college basketball reputation, played basketball at Bullis. First time we go play at the George Mason Fieldhouse with Brett. I don't know. My bar was really high. Like, my expectations for David were like great, and he was fine, but he wasn't as good as what I thought. Called him Clank David at stuff.
Yeah.
Well, and I think he was always bitter. Like, he would get mad because he was like, we got to play again. Sure. He wanted to, like, prove himself.
You can tell he's a passionate dude.
Yeah, absolutely.
Passionate dude. All right, so tell us a story that you said that you said you were going to save it for the air about, you know, how when you're a kid and sometimes people say things to you, and we actually said something to you that stuck with you.
He said it penetrated, and not many things penetrate.
Like I said, I was 20. It was very impressionable. I was searching for mentors.
Okay. At that point. We were your guys. Yeah.
You guys were mentors.
By the way, Valdez, are you impressed by any of this? This superstar that we've groomed?
I'm very impressed. I want to know where I went wrong in life.
Why are you still here?
Yeah. My head hurts from hitting the glass ceiling.
Because you were listening at the same time.
Yep. Right.
So you're at Bullis. You listen to us.
I think you're a very creative guy.
I'm very impressed, and I like all of his shows. I was a big fan of Jury Duty, huge fan of White Lotus.
Yep,
right.
Not so much D-Train.
It's okay, man. It's all good.
Go ahead, David. So what is? Give us the setup.
So, yeah, so I'm 20, you know, looking up to you guys. And for me, again, like, that summer was one of the best summers of my life. I had so much fun working for you guys. I loved it.
Were we dicks? I mean,
no.
We kind of were.
No. You were. Listen,
in good spirit?
You guys were great. You were a little bit standoffish.
Me personally?
Yes, you were a little aloof.
Yeah.
I was always trying to make you laugh.
Me?
Yeah. But, and you know, so I can't remember if it was Jason. So basically, one of you guys, it might have been Jason, said to me, listen. So I was 20 at the time. He goes, listen, the best years of your life, 23 to 25.
It's probably Jason.
And he goes, best years of your life. Goes downhill from there. I was like, wow, really? And
that's
so
definitely a Jason.
I'm like,
he's probably drunk.
Yeah.
But he said it to me, and I was like, oh my God. And I'm telling you right now, like, you know, I have very close friends from Bullis, but close friends from college. I am the only friend in my group that is single, not married. I'm still living like I'm 23. That's upset. I'm like, I gotta just never get older than 23.
Right. Yeah. You're stuck.
For real.
So maybe we ruined your life.
It's possible.
Yeah.
But there's some truth to that in that. All right, 23 to 25. Like, I wanted to go to his premiere last night, but I had to take my kid to swimming practice. My wife's working. Right. Can't make it to a premiere.
I know. I said that's what someone else said it to me yesterday, too. You're like, you don't know. You're trying to schedule and make plans. You don't understand what it means to be married or have kids. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm like just single. I have no responsibility. So, drop of a hat, I'm anywhere.
Right.
And I don't contextually understand my friend's dilemma.
But so you have parents. Right. Are your brothers married? You said your brothers are in LA,
my
too?
My little brother's married, has a kid. My little brother's single. So,
are they in the business? Did you bring them along? Or
My little brother, we always had this dream of working together. He, you know, one day he may start writing. We're still waiting. He's 42 now. My older brother, my older brother was a doctor, moved to LA, and he married someone famous, and now he kind of just...
Chills?
Chills, yeah.
Mm. Come on, who's the famous person that he married?
He's married to Sia, the singer.
Oh, yeah.
That's
unbelievable.
Pretty famous.
Yeah, who's great. He's wonderful. Yeah.
So he doesn't even practice medicine
anymore?
He
doesn't practice anymore.
Yeah, well, let me look up her net worth.
Now, she was the one that was famous because she would hide behind her hair for the longest time, right? Because she was self-conscious about stuff?
Well, I think she, it's a
that's
genuine...
That's your sister-in-law.
Sister-in-law. She's wonderful. She's great. She's wonderful. She's great to my family. And my brother, I think my brother, he was a radiation oncologist and worked insane hours. And I think she was kind of recognized that he should, you know, take a break.
Right. And relax. Enjoy life a little
bit.
Enjoy life
a little bit.
Yeah,
so what has he become good at? Is he a good golfer, tennis player? What does he do?
He's great at going to parties. He's
a socialite.
He's a socialite. He's like, what's the best party in the world? He'd be like, okay, what month are we talking? January, okay. Phuket, Circle Loco, great party. February, you got to go to Rome. You know, he knows where to be at any moment.
All right, so let's get to White Lotus. New York Post had a nice article about White Lotus.
Where
David's got pictures in the New York Post and everything.
Part of what I love about White Lotus is I can be transported to all these beautiful places without leaving my home. I don't need to fly to Thailand. I can watch White Lotus. I don't need to go to Italy. I can watch White Lotus. don't need to go to Hawaii. Can watch White Lotus.
So part of the article was about how you choose locations.
Yeah.
So obviously there's somebody writing a script.
Yeah.
Well, when does the location get in there? Because I would think they write the location in the script and then you got to make it happen.
Yeah,
it's not that way.
No, I think I think the first thought is like, what is the theme of the season? Season two, we wanted to explore sexual politics. So really we were like Europe. We wanted to go to Europe. We wanted a country.
What does sexual politics mean?
I think this first season was really about money and power.
Yeah.
I think season two was always going to be this kind of bedroom farce and kind of this idea of the complexity of sexuality and kind of how sex kind of can drive our decision making and really kind of it's a created power dynamic between couples or people that are single and so we were really focused on France and Italy and we didn't know where we were going to go and Mike who writes all the scripts wasn't sure and we went on a scout and it's kind of like speed dating. And you're kind of going to go and you're like, I'm seeing three hotels a day.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to the best hotels in the world, but you're for 3 weeks, we're in a van or flying around and you're basically going in and immediately you're like, this is not right.
You're sitting, just trying to think how it's going to look on TV or
yeah.
Whatever.
Or, yeah. You're looking at photos. It's kind of like online dating. You're like, swiping on Raya or something. You're like, oh, she looks odd. And then you sit down, and you're like, oh, it's not for me.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what it's like with these hotels. But then you have to be nice. So you basically have to spend an hour faking it. Oh, cool.
Right away. Right.
Right away. Yeah. So then you have to struggle through an hour of small talk with these random GMs. And so season three, we were like, okay, we're going to go shoot in Japan. We were like, we love Japan. We almost did a movie in Japan. And HBO was like, just as a courtesy, go to Thailand. Just do us a favor. There's a great rebate there. It's cheaper to shoot. Just, go check it out. So we're like, okay, sure.
So they're on board. Mike is writing the script. You're producing. They're the glue guy.
Yes, the glue guy. And so I was in Italy doing Immaculate, and I flew from Rome to Bangkok, and we started our search. And we started in Thailand. And we just kind of fell in love with Thailand. And it's one of those countries that just the warmth of the people, food, the culture, it's very intoxicating. Mm-hmm. And so we started traveling through, and really the reality of what happened was we were in the north in Chiang Mai, and Mike got bronchitis and was really sick and ended up in the hospital. And I think the way the nurses treated him really kind of just made him fall in love with Thailand. And they gave him this thing called a nebulizer. It's a strong steroid. Took a nebulizer. He was up for 2 days hallucinating.
Mm. Oh.
And he literally hallucinated the season. And the next day he gets in the van and he says to me, I haven't slept in 2 days and I have these really vivid dreams. And this is what I dreamt. And
that's, like a vision.
Get a vision. Yeah. And that's basically what we shot. And then by the time we left Thailand and went to Japan, we knew we were shooting in Thailand. And then the whole Japan trip became this vacation for us.
Let's just enjoy it.
Let's just use HBO's money and have a great time in Japan. And basically what we shot is what he dreamt.
Wow. Yeah. And then are you involved in that creative part of it? The story that,
Yeah, I mean, with Mike specifically, Mike is a genius. He breaks a story. It's all out of his head. When he wants to bounce ideas off of someone,
you
I'm the guy.
Just listen to him.
Yeah. I'm the guy, and he'll ask me my opinion. And we've had a 20-year collaboration, so I'm there for when he needs me. Mm-hmm. Something like Jury Duty, I'm breaking the story. I'm coming up with ideas with writers, and that's something that's an all-encompassing creative experience. White Lotus, similar, but I'm basically there when he needs me.
I've only seen one episode of season three. It's all that's been out so far, but Patrick Schwarzenegger, it's very horny in the first
very
episode.
Horny.
He's very horned up.
He gets hornier.
You get to see everything basically.
What's up with a penis in White Lotus? There's so much penis in this season.
Penis.
You got to give people David. What they want.
Yeah.
People love Twitter loves penises. You got to give them what they want.
Yeah. Does HBO have a problem? What's the line?
There's no line, I think, with HBO. We haven't found it. If there's a line, we haven't found it yet.
Now that shows are streaming, it's different how people consume it. But with White Lotus, it's every Sunday night.
Yeah, and I think it creates, a water cooler, hopefully, whatever a water cooler is, if that exists anymore. And I think it allows the show to build and the conversation to build. And in season one, no one knew what it was. And I think if we had put six episodes out on a, Friday night on Netflix or something, no one would have found it. And I think just the slow build of the show and the twists and kind of the whodunit allowed the show to build organically. And I'll just say this season, I think, is the best season we've done. And we kind of, it gets to a demonic place, as I say. It gets to a really unexpected demonic place. And I love it, and I'm excited for people to see what happens.
You got Walter Goggins in it, who a lot of people love him from a lot of his work. He kind of first burst on the scene in The Shield.
Yeah. He's very cranky in the first episode. He's kind of
a character just in his face, right?
Yeah, yeah. He's an epic guy. Mm. I love Walton. He's like an actor's actor. Incredibly fun. He's like a guy's guy.
Great guy. Leslie Bibb.
Yeah.
Who, I don't know, she's been in a bunch of stuff. Mm-hmm. My wife and I used to watch some show. She did Housewife or American Housewife or something like that on ABC.
Yeah.
So, can I ask you a broad question?
Yeah.
Oh, you said you've done thousands of meetings. You've met all these people. You've worked on all these different sets.
Yeah.
Who are the most brilliant, like truly the most brilliant people that
you've
met? Well,
it sounds like Mike
industry.
White.
Mike White.
Right. Okay. Mike White's one.
Woke up from like a fever dream and just had the whole season in his head.
Is there someone like, you know, like they always think like who's a guy like maybe even Ashton Kutcher? You don't even give him that much credit for, but he, you know, like people might think he's not brilliant, but maybe he is. I don't know. Who's the guy that does you know that we think is not so great, but you're like no, this person's brilliant.
That's a great question. Oh, God.
They always make fun of Keanu Reeves, you know, people like that.
But he's, I mean, that's the thing is like, I think to have that level of success and that sustained career, you have to be brilliant. Like James Marsden, I think, is brilliant. He's a brilliant comedian.
Mm-hmm.
He's so funny. He's a great, and what he does is so difficult. He rides the line between drama and comedy and kind of, you can do Paradise and you can do Jury Duty, and there's not a lot of people that can do.
And he can
those
do like he's a star in one of the Disney movies with Amy Adams.
He's an incredible singer.
By the way, Mike White competed on Survivor in Amazing Race.
Yeah.
Valdez, you're gonna love Mike White. I've already seen
a season of Survivor.
So by the way, Amazing Race, I had friends of mine from college. I started with Mike. We were working in editorial together, and I was trying to connect with them. Like it was my first week on the job, and I was like, oh, you know, I love Amazing Race. He loved Amazing Race. And I was like, we should apply together. And so Mike and I go out. We were wearing matching blue velour jumpsuits. We ran around LA filming this stupid video. We fill out the application. I drive to El Segundo. I drop it off in a box. 2 weeks later, CBS calls us. And I eventually got recast. They just didn't like me. And I got recast.
Unbelievable. It's a reality show.
I got recast for his dad. And I was so relieved because I was like, 26, and I didn't want to be on a reality show.
Right. Oh my God.
But I'll tell you something that was funny.
The best thing ever happened to you.
The best thing that ever happened to me. I remember I worked for you guys that summer. The next summer, I go down out to LA, and I was telling you guys in the break, I always wanted to impress you guys. You guys were like that like withholding father that I just wanted to impress. And so I was working at Warner Brothers, and every actor that would come in, I would try to like buddy up with to get their info to call you guys and be like, hey, I got this guy to, like, so they're gonna be a guest on the show.
Right.
And
you wanted to be Ryan the Bellhop.
Yeah.
And LL Cool J came in and I was like, okay, this is my shot. I'm like, I got to buddy up to LL Cool J. I was like 21 at this time.
Right.
Probably wearing like bad outfit, bad suit or something. And I remember like buddying up with him and like, da-da-da. And I remember I was like, yeah, you know, these guys in DC, you should be on their show. And he gave me someone's info. He's like, call my manager or something.
Right.
And I remember emailing you guys or calling you guys, being like, I got LL Cool J's info. I'm going to get him on the show. And he probably gave me some fake email. Anyways, I never delivered. But I'm going to deliver someone for you guys. Next time I see you guys,
You delivered yourself, man. It's been awesome time reconnecting with you. We got another guy coming on the show, Jim Van Stone, coming up next. But that's David Brennan.
Watch the next episode
of White Lotus on Max this Sunday for the Junkies. Be right back. That was almost like a high school reunion. You know what I mean? We hadn't seen Brennan in a long time.
Great to catch up with him. So I haven't seen him in a long time.
Super successful. Yep. So hopefully,
good for him.
People enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm.
Going to switch gears. Talk to Jim Van Stone now, the president of business operations at Monumental Sports. They have a special event coming up soon. We'll let him talk about it. What's up, JVS?
Hey, guys. What's happening? Happy Friday to all of you. And, hey, I've got to tell you, you know what? I've been listening to the show this morning, and the balance of sports and entertainment from you guys is absolutely spectacular. The White Lotus is one of my favorite shows. I've watched season one and two, and I think the launch last week was fantastic. So this looks like it's going to be a great season.
Yeah, no, it's unbelievable. It is. And thank you. We try to balance it. And just to see guys like David blossom, I mean, it's really incredible. It truly is incredible. And I'm sorry, Valdez, that we haven't been able to nurture you.
It's all
the same way.
It's all good.
I see the disappointment.
I know.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's okay.
Because I do think you're very creative and very talented.
I appreciate
you
that.
You just don't have a white lotus in you, that's all. None of us do.
Yeah, but now you know somebody in L.A.
The bandwagon.
Yeah. Maybe we can drag you in.
By the way, before we dive into Legacy on Ice, will JVS be in the building tonight as Cakes and I attend the Wizards game?
Yeah, we'd like to rub some elbows. Say hello.
You know what? I will definitely be there. I'd love to say hello. I love your records in the building when we have a Wizards game.
So, well, I am a certain.
We've got to get you guys out more often. And it sounded like Coach this morning wanted you guys to come to every game.
Yeah, certified good luck charm. I don't know what else to tell you, JVS. That's just what I am.
All right, so
what? Enjoy the premium opportunities here at Capital One Arena tonight. The best is yet to come in this transformation upcoming.
It can only get better. What's going on? What's going on with the Legacy on Ice? Tell everybody.
So you know what? I think so many of us in this community have been impacted by the tragedy, at Reagan National Airport, mm-hmm. and you know, unfortunately, 67 lives were lost in this horrific accident. And I think we've always felt it monumental that we are a huge community asset. So we're really proud to help put on an incredible fundraising event on Sunday, March 2nd from 3 to 5 p.m. at Capital One Arena. Basically, the Legacy on Ice event is going to hopefully rally the community in terms of supporting, all the lives that were lost, due to this tragedy. And, us at Monumental, we're donating the building, all of our services, our labor. We're helping to sell tickets for the event. We're, selling sponsorships. So a really, hopefully great give back to the community. And, I think we've always looked at, this venue as really the convener of bringing people together, in the greater Washington region. We want to do more of these community events, especially in light of, some of the tragedies and the challenges that happen out there. So it's going to be a great fundraising event on Sunday, March 2nd.
And you got big stars there. I mean, I'm not a huge ice skating guy, but I know Johnny Weir, I know Scott Hamilton, I know Christy Yamaguchi, I know Tara Lipinski.
Yeah, massive figure skating names there.
You got some big superstars.
It is big superstars in the world of figure skating, past and present. I mean, Ilya Milanin, a local U.S. champion, three-time U.S. champion, Amber Glenn, Madison Chalk, and Evan Bates, plus some of the greatest skaters of all time in Tara, Christy, Scott, and Johnny. So, and really the big MC is going to be Brian Boitano. So this is a fabulous event. We are almost sold out. So we're hoping the final drive over the next week sells out the rest of the building. We still have a variety of the corporate sponsors that are coming on board, and all the proceeds, what's amazing about this, really benefit three incredible charities: the U.S. Figure Skating Association, the Greater Washington Community Foundation, their DCA Together Relief Fund, and then certainly the incredible work of the DC Fire and EMS Foundation. So, to be able to do these things and give back to the community is important to us, and I know it's really important to everyone that lives in this, Greater Washington region.
So Legacy on Ice, it's happening on Sunday, March 2nd, 2025, and people can get their tickets now, monumentalsports.com/legacyonice.
That's correct. CapitalOneArena.com. Tickets start at $25. There's also opportunities for people to do donations to the Legacy on Ice Fund, and that is basically, there's a link at monumentalsports.com/legacyonice. And then certainly if you buy your tickets on Ticketmaster, there's an opportunity to also do some additional donations to the charities from that standpoint. But, we're happy and thrilled. We think we will have quite a few of the family members, that have been impacted by the lives that are lost. And, it really hits home for us organizationally. We had a couple of our corporate sponsors that had team members of their organizations that were unfortunately on that flight. And, I think the other thing that's been, really impactful for us is that we have incredible relationships with all the ice rinks in this greater Washington region. And figure skating is really, really important, to those overall ice rink work, beyond the hockey part of the business and mm-hmm. everything from that standpoint. And a lot of people in that figure skating community have been impacted. So this is a really great opportunity for the entire community to come together and, celebrate those lives and also, just really, think about the families that are going to be impacted for the rest of their lives. So, everyone, if they can be there, you know, we look forward to selling this building out. We hope you guys at the Junkies join us for that day. It's going to be, you know, a really impactful and, you know, giving back day for the community.
I appreciate the time. It's Jim Van Stone, and a couple of us will see you tonight.
Yeah, just come down to the Wood. You'll see us right there. Just right down on the court.
Wait a minute. You guys are sitting on the Wood?
That's what Drab okay. T-shirt told us.
It's kind of where we belong.
You guys go big time. So, no, we'll definitely be down there. Enjoy the game tonight. Go Wizards. Go Capitals. Caps are back on the ice on Sunday at 1 p.m. Against the Edmonton Oilers at Capital One Arena. And, you know, certainly looking forward to the end of the season to come on that front.
We all are. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it, man. We'll talk to you soon. See you tonight.
All right. Have a great weekend.
Yep. Yeah, thank
you. You too, man. March 2nd, you can see some of the best skaters in the world. Johnny Weir, Scott Hamilton. I'm right with you, EB. I cut it off there. It's like looking. I was like, no, Weir, Hamilton, Yamaguchi, Lipinski.
But it shows you how tight-knit that community is, that those superstars are coming together to help, you know, raise funds, obviously, for the family. So, very cool event out of Capital One Arena.
Cakes, did you shed a tear that ESPN may no longer cover baseball?
Yeah, I'm very upset, as you can tell. It's going to ruin my weekend, JP.
Baseball Cakes won't be able to consume on ESPN if they don't reach a deal.
You know what? ESPN, they're making a business decision from the sound of it.
I'm still just stunned that Clank David is like a superstar producer.
I know. He's,
I mean, literally, you can't go on with the show.
It's hard for me to function.
He's a player.
It's just hard for me to function.
He told us, by the way, he didn't want, I guess he didn't want to say this on the air, that we sent him out to do Celebrity Shootout. And he said he was interviewing Joey Galloway, the wide receiver. And he had to ask him a Debbie Does Dallas question.
That shows you how long ago
Galloway wanted to kill him.
He worked on the show.
We said, I mean, I do remember having somewhat of a cantankerous relationship where we would just like, or antagonistic relationship.
Sure, yeah, he was the show punching bag for a while.
Yeah. I feel bad.
But he do.
You know what? He came through it okay.
All right, everybody out there,
all right.
Have a great weekend. For Cakes, EBM JP, B. Mitch and Finley. They're coming up next here on The Fan.